You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Even as cases and hospitalizations continue to go down in Idaho in regards to COVID-19, many health experts say we should not take our guard down quite yet. Joining us today to talk more about where we are with COVID-19 here in Idaho is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, along with Dr. Stephen Nemerson, Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Gemma.
Dr. Pate, I want to start with some information that came out last week from the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare. And their data is showing that the average age of death from COVID for Hispanic people this year is age 65. That's actually about 8 years younger than the average for non-Hispanic people in Idaho. Can you give us some clarification on that? Because I'm wondering, in part, if it's maybe a language barrier. Is it the lack of access to care? What do we know at this point?
Well, Gemma, we don't know that there's a particular thing that we can point to. More likely, it's a whole combination of things. Dr. Nemerson and I have been aware for decades that there is something in healthcare we call disparities of care or social determinants of care, that there are factors about our American healthcare system that disadvantage certain populations. Hispanics are often disadvantaged. Now, there's probably no single factor, but we look to things like education. Obviously, what we've seen is there's a correlation with the amount of education you get and your health. That may not be a direct, it may not be causation, it may be an association. For example, the more education you get, oftentimes the more income you get, and that factors into access to healthcare. And there are certainly Hispanic communities that don't have good access to healthcare. It can also be that oftentimes Hispanics and certain other minorities are disproportionately serving in jobs that the jobs themselves would put them in at risk. So we saw last year, for example, outbreaks at meatpacking plants, plants where people were working in very close quarters without adequate protection and indoors, and we saw big outbreaks. So it's things like access to care. It is, you mentioned language. I think this is something that the Department of Health and Welfare does try to do a better and better job. But you're right. Are there as many sources in Spanish to educate people about COVID and to answer their questions as there are in English? No. And so it's a combination of income, access to care, working conditions, and sometimes there's cultural issues and other things as well, but it's probably a whole host of issues coming together. And what this means for us, and one of the things that we should learn from this pandemic, is that between this one and our next pandemic, we ought to work to address those social determinants of care and those healthcare inequities, but also we should prepare for them. And what would that mean? That would mean that we need to actually get out into those communities with people that live in those communities, with people that are fluent in Spanish. We need to get to them immediately, let them know, help them understand, help them take precautions, make sure that those workplaces where they do have to work in close proximity, they have adequate PPE, et cetera.
Dr. Nemerson, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how healthcare workers are faring right now, in particular at your hospital. And I ask this because, I think at the beginning of the pandemic, we talked so much about healthcare workers, really the fatigue that they were experiencing because of the amount that, you know, doctors and nurses and other people were working, and then just, I think, the mental and emotional stress of having to deal with COVID patients. And we think we've tended to maybe forget that a lot of this hasn't changed for healthcare workers. And now that we're heading into the holidays, that can add even, you know, more stress. So how are people doing?
Jim, thanks for asking that question. It's not just about fatigue and stress. It's about moral trauma. Our healthcare providers are witness to people dying unnecessarily. They're being treated poorly by patients and family members who've been misinformed about vaccination. They're being confronted by others who don't believe that COVID even exists. And then they watch those people deteriorate in our hospitals or delay their care from even showing up at the doctor's office and come in terribly sick, all unnecessarily, and sadly, several patients a week are dying unnecessarily. And you can imagine how frustrating and traumatizing that is for someone who's trying to just do the very best they can to support the patient and their family. So it's exhaustion, it's burnout, compounded by the feeling that we're not able to deliver the care that we're capable of because people are refusing it, rejecting it, or delaying it. Then our caregivers have to go home, where they go out in the real world. And here in Idaho, they see business being conducted as usual, as though COVID doesn't even exist. And it's a profound irony. So what we're doing is a gamut of mental health support, collegial and camaraderie mobilization to help our caregivers to accommodate to this bizarre reality that we don't even require masking outside of the four walls of our institutions. It's helping, but it's helping to a limited extent. And so the other thing that we're trying to do through you, and the reason, frankly, that I'm appearing on this radio program, is to ask the help of the community to continue to say thank you to their neighbor healthcare provider, whether it's a nurse or a medical assistant or somebody who works in one of our offices. Remember, we've mobilized people because of the surge we're experiencing from non-clinical roles into clinical roles to keep things going and be able to deliver the best standard of care. And then the other thing is that given the pressure that's being placed upon our people, delivering a meal to your neighbor who's involved in our workforce, helping to take care of their kids when they're pulled in for an extra shift, these are things that are gonna make a difference so that our folks, my team, when they go out there, they can feel good about the fact that people, the good people, do believe, haven't been poisoned by the misinformation and are there to support them. And Gemma, the other thing I've got to say is, well, we'll probably talk later about the fact that things are finally better here in Idaho. We've gone from terrible crisis standards of care, nearly rationing care, to finally being able to focus back on taking care of those people whose healthcare needs have been delayed. That's going to put continuing pressure on our healthcare systems for months to come. So the situation from our colleagues' perspectives isn't going to change.
Right. And I think that it's so important, in particular, as we head into the holidays, to take a minute and remember what our healthcare professionals have been going through. With that said, Thanksgiving is tomorrow, and we have had so many questions in regards to family and travel. So here are just a couple. Morgan wrote in saying, we're hoping to see grandparents for Christmas. Nancy from McCall wrote in saying, my family is gathering for the Christmas holidays, some from out of state. All are vaccinated except for two toddlers who are not eligible yet. Family members from several households will be staying together. So what tips do you have for staying safe during the holidays? And then Paula writes in, What advice do the doctors have about attending indoor holiday markets where masks are optional or where masks are required? So, Dr. Pate, I want you to take this if you can, because once again, I mean, we've talked about this on the program. It part of it is you have to assess your own personal risk, what you are willing to do. But with that said, I also think people do, or at least the folks that are writing into us, they want to gather. They want to gather safely.
Yes. Well, and that's very understandable. That's the key to our holidays is getting back together with family and friends and celebrating our relationships, our time together. Very understandable. But what we need to remember is this isn't over. And frankly, while those case numbers are coming down, as you mentioned, we are still at a level that is alarming. It is a level of transmission that is similar to what we had last July in 2020 when we had a big surge then. It's even more than that. So we have to understand the threat is still out there. Who is the threat to? The threat is to those who are not fully vaccinated or those that have been vaccinated but for a long time and are due for their boosters. So what we need to do is, first of all, if you're getting together with family, which is great, we want to do that, you should have everybody who can be vaccinated be vaccinated. If you have unvaccinated people that are going to be part of your family get together or friend get together indoors, just understand they are going to bring a significant risk to your group. And so you need to consider, it may not be you that's at the highest risk, but maybe you've got mom and dad, maybe you've got grandma, grandpa, you may have a young person who is immunocompromised, who's going through cancer treatment. You have to think about who is at most risk there. So anytime you're with somebody that's not vaccinated, that's going to be a problem. So if you want to get together, everybody should get fully vaccinated. And if you are in that group eligible for a booster, you should get your booster. Then you need to think about, okay, what are going to be the activities and what exposures are people going to have on their way? So for example, if you drive somewhere, you are going to be safer than if you go through a busy airport, get on an airplane and travel that way. So we need to consider that. A lot of times these family reunions are going to be with toddlers or young kids who cannot be vaccinated. So what we need to do is that immediate period of time before you plan to go to grandma's or wherever you're going, those toddlers, they shouldn't be in daycare. They should be kept at home. You want to keep those kids so that they're not in a high exposure situation right before they go home to visit.
We have lots of questions to get to. So I want to start with Melissa. She asks, is there any data on people who are in a high risk group contracting COVID even with a booster? Dr. Nemerson, could you answer that if you could?
I can. The data is very limited because we've only been doing boosters for a short period of time. But what we know is that the highest risk for someone who's already been vaccinated is in the group that's been fully vaccinated, and it's been more than 6 months since they received their completion of their vaccination series. We think that if you've been fully vaccinated and you've either received your booster or it's been less than 6 months since you've completed that vaccination series, that your risk of contracting COVID, meaning having a breakthrough infection, is about 10 times lower than someone who is not vaccinated. And it may even be a greater degree of protection than that.
Dr. Pate, Farah writes in and she says, I'm wondering if there's any data about the likelihood of vaccinated children who have breakthrough cases of COVID then developing MISC. And maybe explain first off, Dr. Pate, what MISC is, if people aren't aware.
Sure. So MISC is one of those complications, fortunately rare, but not unheard of. And we definitely had cases here in Idaho, but it's a complication of kids getting COVID. And so, once again, as you're thinking about whether to get your children vaccinated, the discussion doesn't end at their risk for death. There are many other risks for complications. MISC is one, long COVID is one, there's others. So MISC is something that we typically see happen in younger children. And often it's children before they're teenagers. And it is often weeks after when they were infected. In fact, many of these children had very mild illness, or the parents didn't even realize they were infected, but then they become severely ill. And these children require hospitalization and oftentimes intensive care. Dr. Nimmerson is actually an expert on this. He's an intensive care doctor for children, so he's really the expert here. But what the point is that this seems to be an exaggerated inflammatory and immune response that we don't fully understand. We cannot predict which children are going to get this and which are not. Fortunately, it appears that if children do survive this, and most do, that it appears that they will fully recover. We need more time to study them, but it's a very serious illness. And so, to answer the question, Dr. Nimmerson may know more. I'm only aware of one case, and that was, I believe, in Denmark. It is almost always, to the best of our knowledge, associated with actually getting the infection. As I said, I think we only know of one case where somebody got vaccinated and then got MISC. And I would not be ready to attribute that to the vaccination, because what we oftentimes see is that, and we see this with adults all the time, that as they're getting vaccinated, they've waited to the point where they also got infected. And so they may have got infected right before they got the vaccine, or they might have gotten the first vaccine shot and then gotten infected. And so I wouldn't be surprised if, on careful review of this one case, it turns out that the child was actually infected and it wasn't the vaccine. But no, one of the best things you can do to prevent your child from getting one of these complications is to get them vaccinated.
And Dr. Nemerson, since you are an expert in this, is there anything else you would want to add? Because I think, now that we can get kiddos from 5 to 11 years old vaccinated, there have been a handful of kids that have gotten breakthrough cases, even if they've been vaccinated. But these, we're talking now that 12 and older range. How concerned should parents potentially be about a breakthrough case with their kids?
Well, the data is very clear in any age group that a person who gets vaccinated is at much less risk of having a breakthrough infection to begin with, and then if they do have a breakthrough infection, having more severe illness. So if you're unvaccinated, your risk of having a breakthrough infection and getting sick or dying at any age, and that includes that multi-inflammatory syndrome that Dr. Pate and you were discussing, the risk in an unvaccinated individual is at probably on the order of 100 times to 1,000 times more. So get vaccinated. And then, as far as the specific one case where there may have been a breakthrough infection resulting in this inflammatory syndrome, it's important to realize that there are many other triggers that can cause that type of total body inflammatory response. And so it's not necessarily attributable to the fact that the patient was vaccinated and then had a breakthrough infection. It may be a completely different etiology, but I think we have a habit of getting trapped in the data and the one case in Denmark of the million or so kids that have been vaccinated now, and being afraid of getting vaccinated. We need to get away from that. It's all very, very clear, big picture. Any age, as soon as you qualify for vaccination, get vaccinated, because it's going to be much better to be protected from this horrible virus than not.
And I think you bring up a very good point, Dr. Nemerson, in regards to MISC or, you know, other immune responses. I mean, I remember knowing a classmate in high school who actually had MISC. That was a long time before COVID. So, you know, I think you're right that sometimes we have to maybe take a step back sometimes and remember other things could also trigger certain medical responses.
Yeah, thank you for saying that, Gemma. I'm really glad you've had that personal experience because this is extraordinarily rare from any trigger, and that includes from COVID. But we certainly know that the risk of a kid who gets COVID is that they could have complications that could last for the rest of their life, whether they get MISC or not. They can have chronic lung disease. They can have heart problems. Again, more rare, but why would you ever want to take that chance as a parent?
Absolutely. Dr. Pate, Hannah wrote this email to us a little bit ago, and I really want to get to it. She says, my beloved knitting group has been very concerned about community safety, and we've been meeting to knit outside throughout the pandemic, even through the dead of winter. They were meeting outside. In mid-December, not only will all of our members, but all of our young children will be fully vaccinated, we're finally considering meeting inside again while wearing masks. She says, Dr. Pate, would you consider this reasonably safe considering our current community COVID situation?
Go for it. So first of all, let me just commend them. Obviously, they are not only doing everything that they can to protect themselves, but they're being very conscious of the risks that they present to others, others within the group, these unvaccinated children. So I just want to commend them. And I think that, you know, again, once you have everybody fully vaccinated and those people who qualify to get them boosters, and this is a group that you can tell from the question, they're not having a lot of high risk behaviors. I can't imagine that this knitting group knits outside, yet some of their members are going to bars every night or
exactly.
Doing other high risk situations. So if you have the combination of everyone fully vaccinated, boosters if they're qualified, and taking great precautions with your life, you're going to be good. And the chances that somebody's going to get infected from a group like that, and especially if they're going to continue to wear masks, they're good. Go for it. God bless you.
And I have to say, there are when we get emails like this from people like Hannah, Dr. Pate, we have been doing this long enough that it gets me through, right? It is so, it's just so refreshing to know that there really are people within our community who are thinking of not just themselves, but the broader community at large.
Absolutely. And you know what? This ties back to the question you asked Dr. Nemerson about the burnout of hospital employees. What I always do when I meet with the doctors or nurses or other people on the front line, I tell them, keep perspective. You're seeing the people that are showing up in your ERs are the people that are listening to the misinformation or believing the disinformation and they're not following the advice. Realize that all the other people that are not showing up at your hospital is because we're doing the right things. We're getting vaccinated. We're taking this seriously. We're trying to protect our families and others. And this knitting group, perfect example.
We have to take another break. I want to say thank you to Dr. Nemerson. I know, Dr. Nemerson, you have another commitment. So thank you for taking time today to talk with us. Really appreciate you.
Pleasure to be here today. And thank you for making sure that the correct information is getting out there and that people know my health system, St. Alphonsus, and all of our providers in Idaho are here to support the community and make sure that they get the protection they need through vaccination and they get the correct information so they know how to protect themselves and their loved ones.
Well, thank you so much for all that you do. Again, a thank you to Dr. Nemerson for joining us. And now Dr. Pate will finish up the hour with us. Of course, Dr. Pate is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, before we get to more questions, let's talk a little bit about the season that we are going into. Tomorrow is Thanksgiving. 4 weeks from tomorrow, it is Christmas. Then we have New Year's. And yes, we are seeing our, as we said, our COVID case numbers and hospitalizations, they're creeping down. With that said, though, we are heading into flu season. And we know, just looking at last year, Dr. Pate, before there was even a vaccine available, because people were masking, we really didn't have a flu season. I'm frankly a little nervous about what this next few months could bring when we still don't have high vaccination rates in Idaho. And we all you have to do is kind of go outside of the downtown area of Boise and you don't see many masks anymore.
Well, Gemma, you're hitting on a very important point. Let's just look at where things are in total perspective for your listeners. So you've already said it's absolutely correct. Cases in Idaho are coming down. Now, that's great. They're coming down from an extraordinarily high level to a very high level. And so we have to understand COVID's not over. Also, if you look at the United States, COVID cases are actually on the uptick again, and the majority of states are seeing increases in their cases, and that's due to those who are unvaccinated. Now, so you have that, and now what are we getting ready to do? We're getting ready to travel, and as we travel, we, depending on how we travel, we are likely to come into contact with many people that we have no idea whether they're vaccinated or not. And we are going to be taking whatever we picked up with us to wherever we're going. So you have that. Then, as you correctly said, last year, hardly a blip of influenza or the flu because we were wearing masks. This year, we expect to get hit much worse by influenza. When does that usually occur? Right around Thanksgiving time and then the subsequent holidays. So we're going to have that additional risk. And then add on top of that, what are the schools doing? They're ending their mask requirements. Mm-hmm. And then what's going to happen is kids who are the major force in transmitting influenza are going to be going to see grandma, grandpa. They're going to be coming back to school. They're going to be spreading this. So what do we do? One is you still have to get your COVID vaccination. You need to get fully vaccinated. If you qualify for a booster, you need to get your booster. I qualify as of tomorrow. I'm getting mine. So you need to get your booster. The other thing is you need to get your flu shot. And that includes kids. Yeah, they need flu shots. And if you haven't got your flu shot and you also are needing one of your, either your COVID shot or your COVID booster, you can get them at the same time if you want. I would actually encourage that because I think you need both of them right away.
And I have to say, Dr. Pate, a couple of weeks ago, I actually got my booster and my flu shot same day in the same arm. It was super easy. So you're right. I mean, and I walked in getting my booster and just said, hey, can I get my flu shot too? Yep. Got it right then and there.
Awesome. Well, that's what we need to do. And then, and women generally have more common sense than us men. So I'm sure there's a lot of people like you that have done that. But don't stop there. Get your husbands vaccinated, get your boyfriends vaccinated, get your dads and grandpas vaccinated. And the other thing is make sure you get your kids vaccinated.
Yeah. And get the flu shot with them too, as you mentioned. Dr.
Exactly.
Pate, Joanne in Boise has a question. She asks, did the West Ada School Board consult with medical personnel before rescinding their mask order? And we should say, in case people are not aware, come November 29th, when school goes back into session, West Ada, the largest school district in the state, will go mask optional for students and staff.
Well, I know that I had an in-depth conversation with one of the trustees who asked for my opinions and guidance. They didn't follow anything that I suggested. And so it's certainly possible that other trustees had talked to other medical professionals. I don't know. However, I find a very poor correlation between them asking for medical or public health advice and what decision they make. As I've said before, that board has very poor governance because they have no decision-making framework. There's no way to guess from the beginning of the meeting to the end how they're going to vote because you don't know what their criteria are and they don't tell people. And as I said on last week's show, I just wish they would just say, look, it would be so refreshing if they just be honest. All we care about is kids being in school and not having to wear masks. That's how we're making the decisions. We're not, it's not our job to protect their safety, their health, their family's health. Just be honest with us. But instead, it's almost worse because they ask for this medical advice and then they totally disregard it. The most shocking was when West Ada actually was hearing from the hospitals who were begging them because we are going into crisis standards of care. And one doctor even got emotional and was breaking up on the call, begging them, please require masks because our hospitals are in such big trouble. And I thought, oh, well, after I listened to that, even I thought, well, it's a done deal. They're going to vote. And of course, then at the end, they said, well, yeah, mask mandate, but you can opt out. And we saw 30% opt out. So I'm just astounded, frankly. And as I said on last week's show, if you would have asked me what is the worst time to make the decision to end the mask mandate, it would be November 29th. And because, first of all, I didn't listen to the board meeting. I just can't even take it most times to listen to that. But they said, well, the vaccines are out. Well, there's a difference between having vaccines and having vaccinations, and they're not giving kids enough time to get vaccinated. They gave teachers plenty of time to get vaccinated last year. Why won't they do that for the kids? Plus, as we just talked about, now we're probably going to add flu on top of that. And even if those kids don't get sick, they're going to take it home. And if their parents get COVID and flu, let me tell you, they're going to be ending up in the hospital. And we know that causes even more severe disease.
Well, and like we talked about last week, Dr. Pate, getting back to this idea of, well, the vaccine's available. Well, all right. Just do the math. November 29th, unless your child was in a study, no child between the ages of 5 and 11 can possibly be fully vaccinated by November 29th. It's not possible.
No.
A number of days don't add up. I mean, the earliest a 5 to 11-year-old in our state can get that second shot is today, is November 24th. It's today.
Yeah. I mean, and as you've said, and I think you said it on last week's show, you're still not completely covered the day you get your second shot. You need a couple of weeks for your immune system to mature from that shot to get the protection. And that's exactly what I told the trustee is, please give parents enough time. I know that not all parents want to get their kids vaccinated, but a lot of parents do. Just give them time to do that so that their kids have some protection. Instead, what we're going to do is remove masks before these kids can be fully vaccinated when we've still got very high levels of disease circulating, when we're going to probably start seeing more influenza circulating, and when our hospitals are still under tremendous pressure, even though it's better than what it was at the worst part. It's just this combination of things. It's just the absolute worst decision they could have possibly made. And I continue to be perplexed by how they make their decisions, unless it is just this matter of what's the very least that we can do, and that the only objection is we got to get kids out of masks. And it's just befuddling.
We have another question, and this is from Kate. And once again, one of these people who are really thinking beyond themselves. And she says, if we are fully vaccinated with boosters, what should we do? What should we do and not do to help bring cases down? For example, eat at indoor restaurants, go to church, inside meetings where you are not sure if everyone is vaccinated. But also, how do we protect unvaccinated children? We have a grandchild who is 4 years old. So should we continue to wear KN95 masks? And again, Dr.
Well,
it brightens my soul to hear people ask about how we help the broader community.
Boy, isn't that right? I just want to extend a virtual hug to that person for being so caring and so thoughtful about others, because with that person being fully vaccinated and getting their booster when that time is appropriate, they're doing everything they need to do to protect themselves. But you know, the point that she brings up about a four-year-old in the household, what you have to do is when you have vulnerable people in your household. So this could be a child who's not eligible to be vaccinated yet. It could be a spouse or somebody else in the family that's undergoing medical treatment that makes them immunocompromised. It could be an elderly person who, even though vaccinated, you know, if they got a breakthrough infection, it could be bad. What you have to do is you have to take the steps you would take to protect the weakest person in your household. Now, one of the great pieces of good news we got is that just by everybody in the household getting vaccinated, fully vaccinated, that can be, you tremendously reduce the risk that one person who can't be vaccinated or is vaccinated but remains at risk because maybe they're immunocompromised, you reduce their risk of getting infected tremendously. So to specifically answer this person's question, what I would do, and this is the behavior I'm doing. I'm fully vaccinated. I will imminently be qualified and be getting my booster. And a couple weeks after I have my booster, then I'm getting together with people that are fully vaccinated. And we can get together. People that are fully vaccinated and I know are careful about their behaviors. Mm-hmm. We're getting together and I don't feel like we need to wear masks. On the other hand, if I go out to places where I'm going to be with people that I don't know are vaccinated, I still wear my mask. She asked about the KN95. You know, a high quality mask is appropriate if you're going to be indoors with a lot of people that you don't know are vaccinated. So it doesn't have to be the KN mask. It can be an N95, but some higher quality mask is appropriate if it's indoors. But what I do is I look at the disease activity. And this, for those people that are going to be traveling over the holidays, look at the disease activity wherever you're going. If it is over... if the 7-day moving average of daily new cases is over 10, they have accelerated community spread. That means you cannot know where who's infected and who's not. You need to take precautions. So, and that's true of most places in the country. So basically, if I'm home or in a small gathering with people I know are fully vaccinated and are taking precautions, I don't wear masks. If I'm out and I'm someplace, particularly indoors, with people that I don't know that are vaccinated, I'm wearing a high quality mask.
Sandra from Boise has a question. She is 66 years old. She's fully vaccinated. She experienced breakthrough COVID. She said it has been 6 months since her vaccine, so she's eligible for a booster. What she wants to know is, would it benefit for her to wait a little bit longer to get her booster? Or should she get tested again to make sure that there's no COVID and then, you know, get the booster right away?
She should not get tested again. So that's the easy part of the question. Don't get any more testing. We don't know the answer to her question. What we think is the fact that she's having a breakthrough infection is kind of like her having her booster from the infection. Mm-hmm. I'll tell her there's two ways she can do this. One is just simply wait till you're recovered from this infection. And by that, I mean, when you can tell that, when you would tell somebody, oh boy, wow, I really feel like I am well over this virus or almost completely over the virus. At that point on, fine for her to get a booster. On the other hand, if she wants to put a little bit of distance between this, there is a theoretical, not science, not proven, but a theoretical possibility that putting some space there, maybe 6-8 weeks to get the booster, she might even get an even stronger effect. We just don't know the answer to that question. I don't think there's a wrong answer. But on the other hand, if she does see us taking off on cases again and having a big surge, just go ahead and get that booster.
Well, and at the end of the day, Dr. Pate, I mean, that's frankly the thing that people need to remember, right? If you're eligible, get your booster, get your kids vaccinated, get your flu shot in particular.
That's it.
As tomorrow is Thanksgiving.
Well said.
I want to thank you, as always, Dr. Pate, for coming in and taking time to talk with us. In particular, as we head into the holiday season, it can be a difficult time for people, I think, emotionally and mentally, and then still dealing with this pandemic almost 2 years in. So, Dr. Pate, thank you for your advice, for your wisdom, for really just being a voice that we need right now.
Well, Gemma, thank you. And at this time of Thanksgiving, I'm thankful for our healthcare providers. I'm thankful that we've got safe and effective vaccines. And I'm thankful that Boise State Public Radio is committed to getting people good scientific information. So thank you, Gemma, for all that you are doing in Idaho Matters.
Well, honestly, I reiterate exactly what you said about being thankful for all of the folks on the front lines. We would not be moving through this without all of you. So thank you. Again, a huge thanks to Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Nemerson, who joined us for the first half hour. He is Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. If you have a COVID-19 question for our doctors, they will, of course, be back next week. So send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And we will try to get your question answered next week. Also, a thank you to all of our listeners as you head into Thanksgiving. We are ever so thankful for all of you. So thank you for being a part of Idaho Matters, for supporting and sustaining Boise State Public Radio. My producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudet. It is Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving. I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful holiday.